say this was for some strange reason today. I'm not sure what's the date. I must check the 14th. It's the first time I don't see a full complement of the members of this portfolio committee. So I've got three members, very dedicated members, but I must say they are female members. I don't see a single man here. Should also say something about men. So with your indulgence, I would suggest that we kindly wait another 5 minutes. Hopefully I'll see at least one man. And then we'll commence, please. In the meantime, tea, coffee, and the strongest drug, what is available at the hospital.
Thank you.
that we commence. If you could kindly close the door.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity once more. My name is Vosin Sebi from the Auditor General. I have two of my colleagues on my right, two SMs responsible for the department, as well as the PMTE.
SMs and PMTE, help us with your acronym. You work with them every day, but the rest of us might not be.
Thanks, sir.
As a poor lawyer, if I have to start speaking Latin here, please continue, sir.
Thanks, sir. With me, Chair, I've got two senior managers on my right that are responsible for the audits of the department, as well as the entity within the department, which is the Property Management Trading Entity, PMTE. Ilse Flava is the senior manager responsible for Public Works, National Department. She'll be leading us on the presentation. Then the Palo Shia, further right, is responsible for the entity within the department. Before I hand over to Ilse, I just want to cover quickly slide 5 by way of introduction, to typically highlight the scope of our audit as an audit institution. We basically provide assurance that annual financial statements are free from misstatements that basically may have an impact of affecting the decision of the users. I would wish to believe that the portfolio committee is one of the very critical users of the financial statement. So that's the assurance we provide, that everything reported in the financial statement is in line with the prescribed accounting framework. We do not provide, however, assurance on the appropriateness of the departmental budget. Secondly, we look at the usefulness and reliability of performance information reported in the annual report, whereby usefulness we look at issues pertaining to objectives of the department or entity are in line with their mandate. Are they captured in a very objective way of allowing one to measure the extent of performance in line with those objectives? Then we also look at the reliability of information that is reported to establish whether it's supported by adequate audit evidence, as well as all the other necessary audit trails. Then in that aspect, we don't provide commentary on the actual service delivery, so to speak. Then we also look at material non-compliance with relevant key legislation. In that case, we don't look at the whole suite of legislation that affect the entity or the department, but our main focus is on key legislation that relates to human resource management, financial management issues, the key ones which borders around supply chain management issues, because most of the core mandate of the department is basically to use the resources allocated to pursue their mandate. We also assess key internal control deficiencies in the environment, where there's a lot of insights there in terms of what are the risks that are attendant to weaknesses in the internal control environment, risks which may impact the department or entity not meeting their mandate, risks that relate to auditees paying more or than the value that they're receiving, as far as the procurement of goods and services are concerned. We also highlight risk around opportunities for fraud that may take place in the environment. But however, we don't go deep and do the audit as the fraud investigation would do. That is the scope, Chair, as far as the audit goes. I'll hand over to you there to take us through to the main presentation. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm going to just commence where Bootsy left off and kick straight off into the overall outcomes of the public works portfolio. I'd like to start on the top left corner, which shows us the graph of the overall audit outcomes of the portfolio. And when we look at it, we can actually see that there's been a regression overall with the IDT, which was previously qualified, but this year the disclaimer of opinion, which you see reflected in the red block at the bottom. DPW, CIDD, and CBE remain unqualified. However, they all had compliance findings and findings on predetermined objectives, where PMC remained qualified, but on IDT we could not express an opinion. The main reasons for the disclaimer of opinion at the IDT, there were four main points, and the audit report actually puts it in a bit of technical terms, but I'm going to try and explain what the main issues there were. So the first thing, which says program cash and cash equivalents and programs reserves and liabilities, basically what that entails is IDT runs projects on behalf of client departments and entities. Therefore, they receive funds from these client departments and entities, and then they obviously also expense in terms of the funds received and the project that they're implementing. What you found that during the previous year, that would be 13-14, the IDT was qualified because they did not do proper reconciliations on those funds and received from the client departments and then the expenditure. In other words, they don't know at year end what they're owing either then to the client or that the client is owing to them. That wasn't addressed during the under review, which means that there were old reconciling items which are still not addressed, and then obviously for the current year this remained an issue because there needs to be reconciliations on a project level. With respect to revenue and trade and other receivables, this relates to the IDT project management fee. The project management fee is calculated as a percentage based on services rendered by suppliers and retentions withheld from client departments and entities. However, the IDT has significant internal control weaknesses and couldn't identify all invoices and accounts and account for them in the correct financial year. Therefore, we were unable to see whether that management fee is fairly stated. Then with regard to trade and other receivables and other losses, the IDT did not perform an individual assessment on each project to identify impaired debtors. You will notice that they did actually raise an impairment provision, which amounted to approximately, $41 million. So they did raise an impairment provision. However, they are meant in accordance with the accounting standards to go project by project and assess the recoverability of the debtors of each of those projects, and that wasn't done. So that then also led to us not being able to express an opinion on whether that impairment is fairly stated or not. And then the remaining qualification, which also resulted in the disclaimer of opinion, is there were a number of immaterial uncorrected misstatements on the financial statements on expenditure, other income, property, plant and equipment, and trade and other payables. All of this resulted in obviously material and pervasive misstatements, which resulted in us not having been able to express an opinion. Then with regards to the PMC received a qualified opinion, and the main reasons for that were, first of all, the accrual. As PMT actually implemented a new accounting system through the financial year under review, however, not all the modules were implemented. So in other words, then they still have to revert back to the manual process of getting accruals, which is obviously the services or goods that were rendered before year-end, however, not yet paid before the year end. So with that manual process, because it's decentralized, it actually exposes the entity to a lot of human error. And when we audited this, we did find a material understatement of the accrual balance. However, management has opted not to revisit the population in its entirety. Therefore, we were unable to eventually say by how much the accruals were understated. Then receivables from exchange transactions, this is actually linked to the above, because when you, if you look at PMT's business, you actually see that whichever expenses they incur, they then get recovered from client departments. In other words, if there's an accrual on their spend side, you should similarly accrue for the revenue on that transaction. So the problem on the one then led to a problem on the other one, which also resulted then in receivables being understated as well. With regards to operating expenses, the main problem there was the property rates. We actually went through an exercise where we tried to link the property rates to an individual immovable asset to ensure that only valid property rates were paid for by PMCE. The problem is that because the fixed asset register is not yet on an information system and it's actually being run outside the system, the indicators on that register did not correspond 100% to the property rates indicators to match the properties. So we went through a big exercise and eventually we did manage to link some of the properties. However, a significant portion of that could still not be linked. So, and management were unable to provide evidence to show us that they were actually meant to pay those rates on behalf of somebody else. So at the end of the day, we weren't able to say that all the property rates that were paid were actually valid. Then, if we move on to the next slide, it's the risk areas just below that. I'm not going to deal now specifically with the quality of financial statements, performance reports, and compliance because there's separate slides dealing with that. With regards to financial health, you'll see here that PMT is actually still the entity that's in the red, and then we did distribute the briefing notes, which contains most of the detail on these matters. So on page 31, we can see at PMT, although an improvement has been noted, the entity's overdraft has actually increased from 433 million to 674 million at year end, and the net current liability situation has also deteriorated. However, the entity is comfortably in a net asset position, so overall we can summarize it as improving but not yet there. The root cause for that was mainly the fact that PMT is still struggling to recover some of the money, or tiniestly recover some of the money that's owed to them by client departments. And as previously, we actually have now for a number of years asked management to consider to actually change the billing model of the PMTE, to consider actually billing client departments in advance to try and get out of this overdraft situation. With regards to IDT, obviously, previously we reported going concern issues on IDT. So when this year we did an assessment, based on the financial information that was provided, IDT was not specifically in a going concern situation. However, one must just take into account that we could not express an opinion on the financial statements. So actually, IDT is still at risk, as well as the fact if you take into consideration the impairment of the debtors, it might actually be more significant than what was reported. With regards to the rest of the entities, we didn't identify any significant going concern issues or financial health issues. I would just like to highlight some impairments that were actually disclosed by management themselves. With regards, you'll see that it's an emphasis of matter on our audit reports. Material impairments were actually reported by PMT, which was approximately 100 million, GPW, that was approximately 53 million, and then the 41 million that I've already mentioned for IDT. So that is all as a result of irrecoverable debtors, or that considered being irrecoverable. And then also just to highlight another emphasis of matter on the public works audit report is just the understanding on program 2, the sub-program infrastructure to the amount of approximately 70.6 million. This is also something that has been repeatedly emphasized in our audit reports because management, and specifically in the accounting office's report, it does highlight that there are still significant challenges in ensuring the adequate spending on the infrastructure budget and making sure that the delivery actually takes place on that. Then moving on, with regards to human resource management, with regards... Yes, it's on the slide. Should I refer to the briefing notes as well? I'm just going to... Apologies for that. I know the notes were distributed in advance. That's why I was... Hopefully, I think it was.
This slide that's currently on the overhead projector is very, very useful, and it's also very nice to put it in different colors, and it gives us a beautiful overview, but it's very small. Is it possible, a request, that we can have each of those kind of slides, it looks like it could be a separate slide, printed out on a separate page, so we have a bigger and more readable, easily to read. It's very valuable, but...
I'm sure the audit office will be kind enough to accede to your request.
Okay.
You may continue.
Thank you. Chairperson, unfortunately, the things are not necessarily following chronologically in the briefing note. However, on page 32 of the briefing note is what I'm about to discuss on HR management and consequence management. So with regards to the National Department of Public Works as well as the MTE, as we all know, there has been a significant transfer of functions in the public works / PMTE domain, where with the onset of this financial year, public works will mainly be responsible for policy making, EPWP, prestige procurement, whereas PMTE will be taking fully fledged over the function of all the property managing activities. So with in conjunction with that transfer functions, there was an updated organizational structure that was prepared. However, unfortunately, all the posts, it was not approved before year end, so therefore there was not posts that were filled within 12 months, and the main reason for that was the delay in this organizational structure being approved, because obviously the appointments need to take place in line with the new requirements. Additionally, if you had a look on DPW's old organizational structure, there was a lot of unfunded posts that was filled, which resulted in the budget being used for that and then the funded posts not being filled within 12 months. Concerns with respect to IDT as well as CBE is IDT basically is significantly under-resourced compared to the growth that the IDT has shown in the past couple of years, especially in the finance department. There isn't proper capacity in each province to manage the magnitude of projects that IDT has actually taken on, and this also resulted in that qualification where we say the project reconciliations were not timely performed. On CBE, we've seen that during the past year there was a bit of instability in leadership, and there was also a number of investigations which was done under the year under review, and that's on page 42. Basically, the functions of the council were investigated. That was concluded at hearing, however, it was not yet published, the results thereof. The recruitment processes were also questioned, which actually resulted in a lot of internal control deficiencies being identified with regards to the recruitment processes. And then there was also an investigation into the CEO, which was still in progress at year-end. Then moving on to information technology, with regards to public works, and that will be discussed and just now when we discuss the performance information, the significant issue with information technology actually related to the EPWP program, which relates to the accounting for predetermined objectives, the achievements thereon. However, the department is already in the process of actually changing the system. So therefore, this matter should hopefully resolve itself in the upcoming financial year. With regards to PMT and IDT, the information systems obviously contributed to the qualifications that were identified. side, as we alluded to, PMCE actually has not, although they've got a new accounting system, they haven't yet implemented all the modules on that new accounting system. Like, for example, the accrual module and then the immovable asset module. With regards to IDT, obviously the system that they've got currently in place is not enabling them to easily be able to perform the reconciliations of client department funds that we alluded to before. Then if we have a look on top at the assurance levels, I would like to just take you to slide number 11 at the bottom, which actually explains to us the different levels of assurance. If we have a look on the board there, the first level of assurance, which is basically on the ground, is your senior manager of senior management, accounting officer and authority, and executive authority. And the assurance that's required from them is extensive. The assurance role, I think we've read through this, but obviously senior management must take immediate action to address specific recommendations and adhere to financial management and internal control system. The accounting officer is responsible to hold officials accountable and to implement and for the implementation of internal controls and reports, progress quarterly and annually. And then obviously the executive authority, which should monitor the progress of performance and enforce accountability and consequences. When we look at our second level of assurance, we then look at coordinating and monitoring institutions, as well as, very importantly, internal audits and the audit committee. National Treasury and DPSA are good examples of monitoring institutions which monitor compliance with laws and regulations and enforce appropriate actions when necessary. And then obviously there's internal audits and the audit committee, which has to play a critical role in also providing assurance on management's actions and providing that oversight to ensure that management is on the correct track. With regards to the third level of assurance, here we speak about independent assurance providers, which, for example, is like this committee, the portfolio committee, public accounts committee, and then the National Assembly, which obviously then provides that overview over the entire portfolio. So with that as a background, we did assess during the course of our audit the first and the second levels of assurance, and as you noticed, yeah, it nicely actually speaks to the audit outcomes, where I don't think I'm going to read each one, but you can clearly see here, if you look at the bottom, the green says they provided adequate assurance, whereas the yellow says provided some assurance. If you also have a look at what we're going to discuss now regarding the financial statements, I mean, even if you have an unqualified audit opinion, however, there were significant adjustments and material adjustments that took place, went through the audit process, then obviously that required level of assurance is not there completely yet, because obviously the unqualified opinion was as a result of the audit process. So this we've discussed during our engagements with management and the relevant parties, and we've also provided recommendations in order for them to get to that required green level. With regard to the root causes and the key controls, these are just slides highlighting to us which actually what was the internal control deficiencies and the major root causes that led to the findings and the qualifications on IDT and PMCE. The first one, which was prevalent in a lot of entities, was slow response by management in addressing the root causes of poor audit outcomes. That is mainly because a lot of these matters were repeat findings from the previous year in our previous year audit report, and also was highlighted to management during the interim audit process. So what we are saying is that quick and prompt action were not taken to resolve matters previously reported. I think we've dealt with the key positions vacant, or key, which was mainly a DPW and PMTE issue, and relates to that organizational structure matter. Then lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions. Obviously, CBE, we've dealt with the investigations that's currently ongoing at CBE, so there was a lack of, previously a lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions there. That was also a main reason for those investigations being initiated. With regards to GPW and PMTE, there's unique circumstances in the sense that it's a a lot of it relates to the huge bulk of irregular expenditure that was identified specifically in PMTE previously when they went through the exercise to clear the qualification on irregular. I think as most members might recall, PMTE was qualified for a number of years on the completeness of irregular expenditure, and then last year they actually went through a huge exercise to identify the full irregular expenditure. I think that was from 2019, which resulted in billions of irregular expenditure. Obviously, there's an expectation that each of those contracts or procurement transactions should be investigated. And obviously, as a result of that bulk, for DPW and BMC, they haven't yet managed to get through that load, and that then results in a non-compliance, basically, to say that the investigations didn't take place on time. With regards to the status of key commitments by the Minister, as we all know, there is a multi-year turnaround strategy ongoing at the Public Works and PMTE. So what we said that we do feel that the Minister has achieved during the under review is to actually stabilise and enhance leadership at DPW and PMTE. The accounting officer has remained stable now for a number of years, so has the CFO, and most of the senior positions are now filled with permanent officials. The rest of this, with regard to the prestige procurement, that's in progress, immovable asset register, a very important thing to take note of, because as we highlighted in our audit report, PMTE has elected to make use of Graft Directive 2, which basically exempted them from valuing immovable assets for the past number of years. However, at the end of the 2015-16 financial year, that is by 31 March 2016, PMTE is meant to present the immovable asset register that's fully compliant with all the accounting requirements. So that will be a significant focus area in the upcoming year. And then lastly, with regards to the leasing environment, we'll deal with that also when we speak about procurement. That there was a huge exercise done in the previous year, and however, there were still some shortcomings that were noted. However, there was an improvement, so we're saying that that's in progress. And then with regard to human resources, that's obviously also in progress because they are in the process of implementing that new organizational structure. If we move on to the next slide, which is the quality of submitted financial statements, what this slide highlights to us is what I've alluded to before, to say that through the audit process, material misstatements are identified. So if those material misstatements are corrected through the audit process, what that actually means is that the entity or the department would have received a qualified opinion had it not been for those adjustments. So we have to commend the CIDB because they submitted from the word get-go financial statements that was fairly presented. However, for DPW and CBE, there were those material adjustments, and then obviously for PMT and IDT, significant corrections could not be made to get them to an unqualified status. With regards to the quality of annual performance reports, here's a comparison between the previous year and the current year, and if we have a look at this, it's once again IDT that showed a regression. If you have a look at the slide previously mentioned, all the entities in the portfolio had material adjustments on their performance reports. In other words, none of them would have had this green status on reliability of performance information had it not been for material adjustments that were made to these reports previously. The remainder of issues after the adjustments were made was on DPW and IDT. For public works, it mainly related to the EPWP program, and there I can refer you to page 16 of the briefing notes, where we highlight why 26% of the targets could not be verified for reliability. If we have a look on page 16 of the briefing notes, basically the EPWP program is being implemented by implementing bodies. So when we went onto our site visits to go and determine whether the performance that's being reported, namely the work opportunities, is actually valid, we had a look at supporting documentation, and in a number of instances we were not able to get the project files which contains the IDs, the tenants registers, the cash buyout registers and so forth that we needed to verify the validity of this performance. That accounted for 26%. However, the information system that was in use that I previously also referred to did not have adequate built-in control to ensure the validity of the information on the system. So when we ran computer-assisted audit techniques, we, for example, identified numerous invalid identity numbers on the system. Also, for example, deceased beneficiaries that was on the system. So management did attempt to clear that towards the end of the audit, and I know that in the current year they're working on that matter as well, but that was a significant concern which we said to them they have to address with the implementation of the new system. Also, a significant contributing factor to this whole matter was the lack of or the late involvement of internal audits. Because ECWP is one of the more key priorities in the department, we said to them that actually you need to get in there and do the work before external audit comes along, and you actually need to make value-adding recommendations for management to implement. For example, regular site visits where you go and have a look, are the documentation there or not, you know, making recommendations, doing follow-up visits to ensure that all the implementing bodies are well aware of what they need to keep for audit purposes. Then as well, something to highlight is that this was one of the matters that was actually discussed already at an interim audit phase and for a number of years previously. So this once again shows that there was a slow response in dealing with the matters at hand. With regards to IDT, there we looked at Program 1, which was Integrated Service Delivery, and there as well, for 30% of the staff, we were not able to get supporting documentation for the actual achievements that were reported. And for 15%, it actually did not agree to the supporting documentation that we were able to obtain. And that mainly related to statistics with regards to women spend and youth spend at the IDT. With regards to compliance with legislation, we've already discussed the quality of annual financial statements submitted. The next two to the right, the prevention of unauthorized irregular and or fruitless and wasteful expenditure and procurement and contract management basically work goes hand in hand, because if you look at our next slide, which we'll get to, it actually shows you the statistics of irregular, unauthorized and fruitless and wasteful, and what we'll see there is that the bulk of it actually relates to irregular expenditure, which directly goes towards non-compliance with procurement and contract management. None of the entities and the departments in the portfolio were able to prevent irregular expenditure. So this is really a main focus area to say that in the upcoming years, focus must really be placed on prevention. With regards to PMCE, a lot of FEM non-compliance resulted as a result of poor planning, which basically then led to unjustified deviations from procurement processes in order to still be able to achieve a project or procure goods in time. And then a very large portion of it also related to lease procurements, where we were unable to obtain supporting evidence to audit the procurement process for approximately 800 million rand worth of leases in our sample. With regards to DPW and PMCE, they had a new supply chain policy which basically was updated and contained all the updated requirements. However, that was only implemented mid-year through, so that was also a significant shortcoming in the initial part of the financial year. With regards to public works, the main issue still surrounding supply chain management is with regards to prestige procurement, where we did identify significant deficiencies in the communication timelines with regards to prestige procurement events specifically, where public works is informed too late of unscheduled events and are not able to follow supply chain procedures. However, in those instances, we did accept it and said, you know, this is a justified deviation. What was more of concern is that actually there's an annual events calendar. So public works would be able then to determine upfront, you know, which of these events are going to take place when, and we just found that the procurement was not started timely enough to then allow them to comply with all relevant laws and regulations. Then also the ministerial handbook that has been in the process of being updated for quite a while now was still not completed during the under review, as well as the procurement policies and procedures, which we also referred to when we talked about the minister's commitments. With regards to IDT, there were some also compliance monitoring issues, and what we found there is that fair supply chain management practices were not followed in all instances, and then also that people did not actually declare interest in contracts that were being awarded by the IDT and also participated in certain instances in the awarding of those contracts without having declared that there's actually an interest of a family member or so forth. With regards to CBE, CBE did not in all instances invite the competitive bidding process in a timeous fashion for the minimum period prescribed by legislation. The bid adjudication committee was not composed in all instances in accordance with the accounting policy, and then the preferred preference point system was not always applied. With regards to the management of strategic planning and performance, I'm on the left bottom of the slide. This directly links to the performance information reporting processes. So if you have a look at CBE and CIDB, which obviously they managed to obtain useful and reliable performance reports where DPW and IDT had issues with reliability, and that was as a result of the fact that they were not able to manage the strategic planning and performance process properly. HR we've discussed already, and then on internal audit and audit committee, there were no issues at CBE and CIDB. However, at DPW and IDT, we did find shortcomings, but that mainly related to the internal audit function. And the reason for that is that when we assessed the performance of internal audits, we just felt that they did not appropriately capacitated in all instances. IDT has shown significant growth, and Public Works and PMCE is still struggling to get a fully fledged internal audit that's appropriately capacitated to look at all the risk areas, the high risk areas, and then obviously that resulted in them not functioning optimally in advising management on corrective action and then assisting to resolve audit issues. The next slide actually just highlights the unauthorized irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred during the under review. And if one wants to see the comparative figure, you can always refer to page 36 in the briefing notes, where it clearly states the comparative figure as well. Unauthorized expenditure has reduced for Public Works, and that still relates to the Mud Schools project. Because that is technically speaking the schools, building of schools and so forth is a provincial function, the Mud Schools project was declared as unauthorized. However, the department is in the process of requesting condonement and then funding for this project that is in process. Irregular expenditure has reduced for DPW and PMC, the expenditure incurred in the current year. However, for the other entities, it actually has increased. And then fruitless and wasteful, although it's increased slightly at Public Works, it's reduced overall in the portfolio as a whole. We've already dealt with the combined assurance as well as the root causes and recommendations, which is the following slide. So lastly, I would just like to refer the committee to the last page of the briefing notes, where we just made certain recommendations in terms of the oversight in the upcoming year of critical matters that the committee could consider as commitments for the upcoming year, which is basically highlighting the implementation of audit action plans by the portfolio to resolve matters included in the audit reports, in particular for the PMT and the IDT. Page 47. And then the implementation of appropriate information systems at PMT, including the streamlined... No, this is in the briefing notes on page 47. Including the streamlining, the implementation of appropriate accrual accounting and the billing system at PMC, which will eliminate manual processes, and then continuously monitoring the actions being taken by leadership in the portfolio to prevent irregular expenditure, monitoring the effectiveness of internal audits, monitoring management's actions to resolve issues regarding financial health at the PMCE, and then monitoring the spending on infrastructure at the Department of Public Works and PMT, and how it links to actual service delivery of infrastructure projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any further additions from other officials from the Auditor General's office? Or is that the remit of your presentation?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe to emphasize two key issues so that we provide more context. And I'm sure members can anticipate that it can be part of the questions that we'll receive from the members as part of engagement. I think the one key issue highlighted is the material impairment around rights of where you find that the department may have expected some debtors to be recovered from functional departments, but for whatever reason they decide to write off that debt. So it's a critical risk, and the context behind that is that in some instances you find that the department, National Department of Public Works, needs to engage the user department that requires accommodation and all specifications around the type of accommodation, size, etc. But as part of the audit, there are instances that we pick up where you find that there's a dispute in terms of that accommodation that has been sourced. Some of those accommodations don't get to be utilized. Then you find that there's expenditure incurred by PMTE, but however there are no recoveries from the entity side. Similarly with IDT, IDT is responsible for running projects, infrastructure projects, hospitals, schools on behalf of the department. Then again, there's an element of disputes around how much are the project costs, etc., only to find out there are no recoveries made, despite that there was expenditure incurred by the project itself. So from the portfolio committee side, it would be critical to really get deeper to the root causes that results in those type of impairments, non-recoveries of cash, so that it is quite clear that the action plan that will be devised to really get into the bottom of that so that they get resolved. Another issue to highlight is on the issue of performance information, specifically on EPWP. If we get to audit a number where the department says they've created so much opportunities in terms of the program and cash has been spent through implementing agents, etc., and we don't get to be in a position to provide assurance as auditors to say how reliable or credible that number is in terms of creation of opportunities that have been reported, it becomes a critical issue from the performance perspective of that program, together with the resources that has been expended for that program. So this is a context check around the risks that are stemming from the issues that we highlight from the audit perspective. But however, due to the inherent limitation of the audit, we do audit on a sample basis. We don't really have a view to get to the deeper, perhaps doing 100% of this transaction. It's not accessible. But the risks that we are highlighting are quite alive in the environment that we have audited. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think perhaps from the TMTE side, what I would like to highlight is the irregular expenditure and then the leases. Now, the irregular expenditure, that's 34 billion irregular expenditure that was qualified last year. Management is still investigating it, and as Ilza has already mentioned, in the audit report, we did have an unclassified paragraph on business management. Now, this is due to these investigations not being undertaken timely. So we do acknowledge that there are massive transactions involved. However, some of them have not been started at all. Now, again, this irregular expenditure resulted from the leases procurement, most of it. And then some of it resulted from poor planning and unjustified deviations. Now, if we look at the leases procurement, yes, our National Treasury has granted them an exemption to try and fix the leases and get their house in order. However, if this is not done timely as well, now that big irregular expenditure might come back as well when this exemption from National Treasury expires. Right? Now, on the leases side, if you remember last year, for the past couple of years actually, it has been a historical qualification where the leases were qualified. Now, in the current year, the leases were not qualified, but I just want to highlight to the members the magnitude of the adjustments that were made by management now as a result of the audit process. Now, when the leases information was submitted initially for audit, material errors were identified as a result of the audit process. However, management was able to go back and make the necessary adjustments. Now, whatever remained as uncorrected still contained errors, but we said, well, they are not material. But what I really wish to highlight is a lot of work still needs to go into the leases to ensure that the audit outcome that was obtained in the current year is sustainable. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of the presenters. Succinct to the point, identifies the critical issues. Members, your opportunity to earn your living this morning. Honorable Dreyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got four questions for now. The first is on the restructuring and specifically of the PMTE. And actually, the way I understand is moving the bulk or the body, the soul of Department of Public Works to the PMTA, the PMTE. And this must be seen against the background of the PMTE being the worst performing entity in the family of the Public Works Department. If we look at your kind of the slide that you had overall audit outcomes, the first one 2012 to 2013 to 2014, and you see the PMT was in the red, disclaimer, in 2012, then it was only purple, but then it worsened again, it went back into the red in the 2014-15 financial year. So they're not getting it right. They made a little bit of progress and then they slide back again. Yet, removing the bulk of the public works, the core functions to this very poor performing entity, that's very worrying. And I want to know the Auditor General, when this is probably a political decision that was made, and we can't pass comment on the political, but from a business point of view, on, you know, does it make sense? And how do you, what should be done to correct, you know, I'd just like your comment on this strategic or this reorganization of that. That doesn't make sense to me, and I'm very worried about that. Then the second question was about the asset report. Now, we see the report from the department, they say it's about finalized. It's just about finalized, 99% or something like that. But then it seems when you look at it closer, it's closer scrutiny, it's only a listing of all the assets, all the properties, but they haven't been valued as such. So we have a list of properties, but we don't know what the value is. Is that correct? I'm understanding correct. And so the asset record still needs to comply with GRAP, that you said GRAP. Okay. Now, this is also concerning because it's a bit of a misleading thing to say, well, the asset register is virtually complete, but it's actually not, because if you don't have
the value attached to a property, it's meaningless, because then you don't know what you have in the bank. You know, you've got a bank, a place, what is it, Afrikaans word, Engels word, a safe with a lot of assets, but you don't know whether it's worth 1 billion, 2 billion, or 100 billion, and that's meaningless. So that's also actually more serious than the department, you know, is prepared to admit to. That was my second question, Mr. Chair, and then the third one was on the lease agreements and the irregular expenses. We know from the past that the lease agreements, that area was a major area of major fraud and major corruption. And it seems that very slow progress is being made there. And there's still material errors that are coming in there. What still needs to be done to get that the lease agreements up to proper functioning state? Oh yes, on the slide that looks like this one, most entities did not comply with legislation in the following areas, then you give the different areas. The top middle one, it says prevention of unauthorized, irregular, and or fruitless or wasteful expenditure, that one. And all the departments and all the entities did not comply. That's the correct reading. So that's very bad. It's a red right flashing there. Yet on the next page, when you with the next slide, you talk about the UIFB expenditure. They say the department has actually improved the situation, overall situation. I don't understand that. Maybe I misunderstood you. If you could just clarify and explain that a bit in more detail for us. I don't understand how this page compares with the next page. It seems like a contradiction to me, but maybe I just understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all for now.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Adams.
Thank you, Voorzitter, for the geleentheid. Voorzitter, ek is 'n baie eerlike mens. Ek kan regtig waar sê, ek het nie waarde vir geld gekry die aanbieding nou. Gewoonlik wanneer die IG na ons toe kom, kry ons baie meer as wat ons al kon gekry, maar nie te min, sê persoon. Ek wil begin deur te verwys na die laaste bladsy 47. Daar was 'n klomp aanbevelings gemaak na die komitee toe, dis die briefing notes. Daar word gesê wat die komitee moet doen, the means to be considered for adoption by the present committee. Continuously, the third bullet from the top, continuously monitoring the actions being taken by leadership in the portfolio to prevent irregular expenditure. How do they envisage should the committee do that? As well as the one on monitoring the effectiveness of internal audit and monitoring management's actions. When there is board that has to manage the management's actions, we as a committee see the public works department once every 6 weeks, and we do that monitoring. It is as if soos ek het sien, voorsitter, daar 'n aanleiding is dat ons monitering nie ernstig genoeg is nie. En as dit so is, dit kan 'n wanpersepsie wees en maak 'n beswaar daarteen, voorsitter. Dan, voorsitter, sluit is ongelukkig nog nie vernommer nie. Hierdie een wat soveel kleurig is. Overall audit outcome, DPW portfolio. As die aanbiedster vir my kan sê, daar die eerste een linksbo sê daar is 'n regressie in die regression in audit outcomes. Nou van 12/13/13/14 die qualified with findings. Is daar lyk dit vir ons daar is 'n effense terugsak met die IDT in 2014-2015, as ek hom reg lees. Wat is dit vir oorsak? Die IDT is 'n baie belangrike entiteit van Public Works. En as hulle vir ons groter duidelikheid daaroor kan gee. Ek wil by die selde bladsy bly, want daar is 'n magtom van inligting wat vir ons asseblief verduidelik moet word. En ek wil gaan na die risk area, risk areas. Sal die auditor general sê dat die feit dat daar so baie vakante posisies is, is 'n risk area. En dan die laaste ene, ek dink hulle noem dit by root courses, hulle sê daarso, die onderste ene, die middelste ene, root courses, key positions vacant or key officials lacking appropriate competencies. En dan ek lees 'n boekie daar, wat hulle sê, wat daarin assessed for portfolio. Wat bedoel hulle assessed for portfolio? Beteken dit dat het regressief is of is het progressief? Dankie voorzitter, ek sal daarmee volstaan.
Baie dankie, hier afbare lid. Now prepare yourself for a layman's interpretation. For translation, rather. The Honorable Member says that she expected more information from the contribution from the Auditor General's office. She prefaced the remarks by saying that she's a very honest person. Thus, the clear articulation that she expected more information. Then she proceed to reference page 47 and says that on page 47 recommendations and some of the recommendations are directed obviously more to the portfolio committee and what areas members of this committee should be looking at. And then whilst doing that, she says that she wonders that these entities have got boards. What's the function of those board members? Are they in turn carrying out their responsibility? Because oversight over the entity is not the sole function of the portfolio committee, but boards are employed on a more day-to-day, month-to-month basis to track the vision and mission and everything else in regard to those boards. And then she also would like to know what caused the regression, the major regression in the IDT. And then she also mentions what has been pointed out that key officials lack key competencies for the functions that they are employed for. So this has been pointed out, and then she would like to know what can be done in regard to that. As I say, a Zama-Zama interpretation, the translation from Afrikaans to English. But I believe that's the essence of what the Honorable Member articulated. She not in a sense, so I did not do that then. Honorable Sayer agrees and gives you a thumbs up. So, moet maar meer Afrikaans praten. Ik zal proberen. Ze zullen zeggen, probeer is het beste geweest. Maar, Honorable Member, did you have your hand up? No question.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Hope you didn't hold with you, Katie. Otherwise, I'll just be translating.
Okay.
No,
I'll
continue.
I'll leave with my depression.
of concern, I don't know whether we've been discussing this for the whole last year and this year, which we don't come to the agreement or way forward about it. Area of assets records. Especially the immovable one that they don't, they say they don't correspond, don't know the numbers of the assets of UPW. And the working relationship with the provincial and national, which assets are belonging to province, others belonging to the national. I still got a problem, especially in my area, whereby we have a public works house of land which we don't know exactly where to go. Can we just give us a clarity where to go? The second one is question of this green building policy of energy renewal. I've learned that the Germany companies are the ones who are going to make this water and energy. My concern is that we've got the people here in South Africa, those who are doing that. What about the recommending South African companies in that regard? The third one is question of human resource management, where you mentioned that we've got the 75.7 million, which we need to source from the treasury. What is the problem? Do you want us to involve, or what is happening to fill that vacant, or what is happening in that department? Because this is a challenge. To fill vacant, all those vacancies. The last one is the PMTE irregular expenditure and non-compliance, which is the investigation. Until when? Give us the deadline, because really you cannot talk of this investigation every day. You come here and present. Maybe if you need assistance, let us work together. Make sure that this is going somewhere. The last one is the lease offices, which to date we don't know how many offices have been leased by our department and where. But can we provide that list of lease offices? Thank you.
Members, before, I'm sure the delegation from the Auditor General's office will respond to some of the issues. But I would like to remind you that the responsibility of the Auditor General's office and its officials, they go to various departments and carry out their audits. And their responsibility is to flag, show us what the issues of concern are. The other question, just by way of example, as to the responsibility of the assets, are they provincial or national competencies, in regard to when and how these problems will be solved in particular department. Quite a number of the questions that have been posed by the last two members. This afternoon we have a presentation by the department. It's the department to answer those questions. There are more in the area and scope of responsibility of the department who has to give us answers to those. It's the department that you need to probe. When we speak about vacancies, when are they going to fill the vacancies? The Auditor General's office can only point out that there are an inordinate amount of, or number of vacancies in key areas, and people who are employed there don't have the requisite expertise. It's not the Auditor General's office who would be employing those people. It's a function of the department. If HR employs the wrong people, then you will have the same results every year. So their responsibility is to point out weaknesses within the department. It's for us, when the AG's office has pointed out all those issues, to take up those issues vigorously with the department. So this afternoon we'll have that opportunity to do so. So I just wanted to make sure that we don't pose the wrong questions to the wrong people, send the letters to the wrong address. So let us make sure that when the department comes, it's important that we have information from the AG's office now. It gives us pointers as to areas of concern, which entities are regressing, which are making progress, where are the danger areas. But the people that need to be put on the spot is the department. Not the messenger that says, here's the bad news. The Auditor General's office officials in this case are the messengers carrying the bad news and some good news, saying that this is the state of play. I just wanted us to be mindful of that. But officials from the AG's office, you heard what some of the issues are that were raised by members, so you may respond to those issues. Perhaps just a second before you do that, let me take Honorable Dreya.
Mr. Chairman, just one quick one that I've got. What happened to Agrimah South Africa?
Yeah. Agrimah South Africa. You may respond, good folks. Your time for a rejoinder.
Thanks, Chairperson, once more. I'll take two questions, then I'll hand over to my colleague. I'll respond to the question relating to restructuring of PNP, considering that the entity seems to be performing badly. Then I'll link that to the list agreement one, where the question was saying how is the status of lease agreements, as it is the core mandate of public works, whether national or provincial ones. As AG office, we can't comment on the validity or reasonability of the decision to restructure public works and take some of the functions to PNT. But from the business risk point of view, it doesn't necessarily change the audit focus. How we are auditing the lease portfolio and property management, whether it sits within PNT or public works, it doesn't necessarily change the audit scope. But just to provide context to it, there's been a lot of challenges faced by the department as well as PNT around the legacy issues around leases. But I wish to confirm that when we looked at the audit this year, we did not pick up any significant issues on the lease contracts. However, what is still remaining is cost incidental to those buildings that the government owns, where we raise issues around rates and taxes and all. all other incidental costs to that effect. And purely this is relating to the issue of the asset register honorable members are raising, which is still work in progress, where you find instances where they pay for rent and taxes, but when we follow up from the audit perspective, you find that the building is not owned by the department. So it becomes an issue. But in terms of the core business that is driven from the lease contracts, particularly where they lease buildings from private landlords, we did not pick up any significant issues there. So there is progress that has been recorded on these contracts. So when we follow the lease contracts and see how much is being paid, or current and validity, we are a bit comfortable from the audit perspective. But however, as indicated, there are exceptions in terms of controls around the list of assets in the register, who are the owners, how much rent and taxes are paid, is the department supposed to pay? And there's also invoices where you find that they are billed for rates and taxes. They engage the municipality concerned to say, these bills don't belong to us, but this is how much we are owing the municipality. So, Chair, that is work in progress. Those are the two questions basically I took because they relate to each other. Colleagues, over to you.
Before you took to answering the two questions, you did say that you take the two easy ones and leave the difficult ones to the ladies, like a wise man. I must just say, good folks, one of the questions earlier posed by member, but I think the member also said that there was concern as to giving the PMT greater responsibility, and whilst it's presently in dire straits. So correctly, the policy issue is not one that the AG's office can answer. That's again a question that we have to pose to the department when it comes after lunch. It's their purview and function to answer policy questions, the ministry, the department. What informs the wisdom of taking that procedure or lack thereof? So we are still going to get that opportunity to engage with the department, but I'm just saying to members that note the issues that need to be directed to the department or the ministry where policy and other issues are concerned. Ladies, your opportunity for a rejoinder to engage with the difficult question that the gentleman kindly left you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe just to start off with, just to correct, PMT is qualified in 1314, and in 1415 is still qualified. It's IDT that's sitting in the way. Okay. And then, now on the assets, you're quite right. There has been, the movement is on physical verification, but on actually placing the values on the assets, that a lot of work still needs to go in there. Now, if you remember, when the assets were transferred from the department into KMTE, they had 3 years in terms of directive to assign values and to finalize the physical verification. So in terms of assigning values, when now this directive 2 expires on the digital profile, we've already highlighted this as a concern to management that a lot of work still needs to go in if the audit opinion on assets is to be unqualified. So on assets that's then if we go, I think just to go back to the leases perhaps, if you look at irregular expenditure, the irregular expenditure note, the bulk of that irregular expenditure comes from the
would be the multi-year contract. So about 700 million comes from contracts that were entered into a while back. That's still happening. And then some of it now comes from, so out of that 1.2 billion, 700 million would be on the multi-year contract benefit. And then there is about, I think about another 200 million, I can just confirm quickly, about 400 million actually. Now that's on the month-to-month leases. Okay, so that's straight out the regular. Now that's on the compliance side of leases. Now if you look on the accounting side for leases, right, there were still instances where overpayments were made to landlords. But at year end, for the accounting side, management was able to go and identify that these overpayments were made, and now those were raised as prepayments. Now, some of these landlords, they still have business with, so it is quite possible that we'll be able to recover this money. Now, some of them, they're no longer in business with. This is, it was disclosed under fruitless expenditure of about 25 million. This is where they made overpayments, but now they're no longer in business with these landlords, so there's possibility of recovering this money.
I think the restructuring question has been dealt with appropriately now for the part that we could respond to. With regards to the asset registering, that's also been dealt with as well as the leases. I would just like to explain how the slides work. I understand sometimes it's not that easy. The middle top one, which says that nobody managed to prevent unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Obviously, that was a non-compliant finding throughout the portfolio, because even if you have a look at DPW and CIDB, where we did have procurement findings, but it was not that material. For the larger part, management then managed to identify a lot of the irregular expenditure. So irregular expenditure was incurred throughout the portfolio. That's the reason why it says all. The reason why the red arrow points downwards, and it's a regression, if you go to the next slide, if you have a look there, it speaks about repeat findings. However, for CBE, it's a new finding, which means last year, this finding was not in CBE. That is why it's a regression, because last year it wasn't the entire portfolio who had the finding. So that explains how the slides work. With regard to Agriman FA, for the year, the department is in the process, I understand, and this is probably something that should be checked with management as well, to list them as a public entity in the PFMA, but that was not yet concluded, I understand, at the end of the previous financial year, so that is still in progress, and the money that was paid to Agriman SA was classified as irregular expenditure. Then with regards to page 47, which has proposed commitments in here, we fully concur with what the member said regarding the functioning of boards, and obviously when you looked at the levels of assurance, I think that also explained it. If we have a look on, let me just find the slide. Typically your board members and those people will sit on your first level of assurance, whereas the portfolio committee sits on the third level of assurance. So if the phrasing is incorrect, then you understand that we mean you must be actively monitoring and having a daily overview. That's not the intention. Actually, we, from our point of view, the portfolio committee should be looking at what leadership is doing to address these matters. So, for example, we were saying continuously monitoring the actions being taken by leadership in the portfolio to prevent irregular expenditure, including progress made on investigating alleged irregular transactions at PMTE to eliminate backlog. For example, this would come in the form of the department reporting back on a regular basis and providing the statistics in terms of how they are making progress to reduce the large volume of irregular transactions that must still be investigated. Effectiveness of internal audit, typically that would also come in the form of either the internal audit units of the department or entities coming here themselves and doing a report back, or management for that matter. But with regards to internal audit, the pertinent inquiries there would be is whether internal audit is actually looking at all the high-risk areas, because that is what we've historically found in public works and the MCE, is that the very high-risk areas which was or disqualifications or historical issues gets moved towards the latter part of the year, which doesn't give management adequate time to respond to their findings, if they have findings, and then to correct it before the external auditor comes along. With regard to monitoring management's actions to resolve issues regarding financial health at PMC, that would typically be an example to ask about the systems, the new billing system, how far are they in implementing it. So that was more the idea with these type of commitments to be considered. However, this is just a suggestion from our side, and in no way does it mean that we don't think that the committee is doing their oversight function in a robust fashion. With regards to the regression in the audit outcomes of the IDT, IDT implemented a new system the year before the last, and that system implementation did not run as smoothly as one would have hoped. It also combined with that fact is the fact that IDT has increased and grown exponentially. So it is a question that currently, specifically with regards to finances, with regards to accounting for transactions and projects like we've discussed before, there's definitely not enough capacity to properly account for all of those projects and to do all the reconciliations that's required on a monthly basis. So probably the regression is mainly due to some system issues that were encountered, as well as a lack of appropriate human resource capacity with the appropriate skills to deal with the big volume of projects and to reconcile that on a five-year basis. With regards to the risk areas for vacant positions and fields lacking the appropriate competencies, I think in our case at PMCE, I think one might still say it's a slight issue, but I think big strides have been made with regards to appropriate competencies. I think a few years back, there weren't a lot of people around that could actually grasp the accounting concepts and account for it properly. We don't necessarily have such big issues with that at the moment. The issue is more with the vacancy level. But as explained, and I think this combines nicely with the restructuring issue, is that obviously because they're waiting for the updated organizational structure to be approved so that they can start appointing people, and I want to go, they put a freeze on appointing people, but it did hamper the progress in terms thereof. So yes, the vacant positions is a big concern, as well as the budget that goes with it, because I think that management can also elaborate on this a bit more, but our understanding from our elaborations and discussions and engagements with them was that the budget at this point in time is definitely not adequate to appoint all the people that they would like to appoint to have their desired organizational structure. Then there was a question, I don't know whether I'm going to answer it appropriately. There was a question about the CEFOR portfolio. The only place where I can see that right now is at the executive authority. That just means that it wasn't assessed on an entity-by-entity level, but more on an overview level for the entire portfolio, which includes all the auditees, CPW, CIDB, CBE, PMC, and IDT. Things that Movable Assets have been dealt with. The green building, I think the department must deal with. The appointment of South African versus German companies. As well as the other questions, I think it would be more appropriate, in my view, for the department to respond to that. I hope that covers all the questions.
Good members. Any further questions, comments? with the presentation that will be made by the department later on. But I'm sure that as we move forward, even after receiving the information from the department, if there are questions as we move further, that we still want to have greater clarity or interaction with, we'll engage the Office of the Auditor General. So we'll still call on your expertise and information. So if there's nothing further that you'd like to comment on, it seems this is how far we can travel down this route today. But anything further, good folks? I'm referring to the officials from the AG's office.
Nothing from our side, sir.
The only thing I can offer you at this juncture is more tea and coffee. So on this note of tea and coffee, we'll break until 2 o'clock. We have our next meeting when the department will be here, honorable members. But now I offer you tea and coffee. Thank you very much, good folks. Delegation from the AG State.